Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Coming up on this Monday edition, a look at the weekend, what happened with the hurricane. They're still trying to figure out some of the damage there. Also, look back at September 11th, really big day in American history, of course, and even global history. Some information about that. And division in America. We've got a booklet that explains what's happening and what you can expect to see coming up in the near future. That and more in this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. Have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that at kpcgfm. And any emails you'd like to send along, send those to comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here with you today. And how was your weekend, Grant? You have a good one?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Got to play our first flag football game as a team yesterday. Our Imperial Academy team was holding on there in the third quarter, and then that we allowed the last 21 points of the game. So the wheels fell off at the very end.
That's a rookie mistake.
Too many mistakes, like three interceptions and a couple turnovers on downs, and just couldn't sustain all of those mistakes against a much more experienced team.
Yeah, we had tremendous weather here over the weekend. We've had just a great run of weather, and it's so ironic because so many parts of the country have been struggling. But we had beautiful weather. Of course, Florida got hammered over the weekend, and the Keys, all that area. Hurricane Irma. Here are some of the details about it. They say much of central Florida, including Orlando, suffered significant damage as Irma blew through Sunday night and into Monday morning. They're still, of course, trying to assess all the damage and what happened. Irma is causing record-setting flooding in Jacksonville, Florida, as it moves over the state today on its way to southern Georgia. The National Weather Service in Jacksonville says storm surge flooding exceeds the record set in 1965 during Hurricane Dora. Some people might still remember that from back at that time. Nearly 4.5 million homes and businesses across Florida have no power today. And police in Miami are investigating reports of people looting stores as Hurricane Irma hit the state. Don't know how many were involved in that, but a few anyway, unfortunately. And so it's just like Harvey in a way, where you have to wait, I guess, a day or two, be able to get in there and then assess everything that happened.
It's really disturbing to see footage of what is taking place in both hurricanes, but now Irma is the more recent one over the weekend, with just the water so high in the roads and then getting into homes and wind and rain going sideways where it's almost knocking people over. And just really entire cities that are usually heavily populated and crowded just looking completely desolate.
Yeah, it reminds me of those movies you'll see where they really, well, they kind of overdo it, but they have the big wave coming into the city. And this isn't that, it's worse because it's reality, obviously, but it's not as dramatic to see in terms of the way they do it with the animation. But when you do see it, it is odd. You know, those used to be streets and now they're waterways. There's a little video on CNN of this fellow. He was trying to take video, I think, of the water. Standing kind of on the shoreline, and then all of a sudden a huge wave came over and blew him right off the where he was standing. I think he was okay, but the power, you know, that just gives you an idea of the power there. And if you get hit by that, nothing you can do.
Right, and I also heard of stories of people from Hurricane Harvey being rescued in boats. And so you listen to that, maybe you gloss over it the first time, then you have to pause and think, wait a second, how are they being rescued in boats from their house? And that just shows you how extreme it got.
Yeah, really amazing storms there. So still going to see what all the damage is there. Yesterday, the J.J. Watt. He's a player for the Houston Texans, and he's been pretty active in trying to get a lot of money raised for the victims of Hurricane Harvey. And so, they were playing in Texas there, and I think they were anyway, and the crowd obviously just, erupted when he came out, and they were really happy to see him, and then the Texans got beaten pretty badly, so I felt bad for him.
I think they allowed like 10 sacks to the Jaguars. The Jaguars haven't had a winning record since 2011, but they were probably getting hit by Hurricane Irma there in Jacksonville as well, so it's nice for the Jaguars to get that win, even if Houston didn't get the win they were hoping for. J.J. Watt, though, that guy is just a class act. I mean, every way, he's pretty much, the best example of an athlete I can think of right now. Just the way he is that selfless and totally dedicated to the team, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, so unfortunately they didn't get the win there, but that's interesting. I didn't think about that. Both teams were having hurricane issues.
Yeah,
so it's
crazy that they matched up in week one like that.
Hurricane Bowl. They should have had them play in the middle of the U.S. someplace that doesn't normally get NFL games Nebraska or something.
Give them a neutral site game and just see who has more fans show up.
Yeah, no threat of a hurricane hitting you there in Nebraska. I was watching. I'm a big Packer fan, so I was watching some of that game, and they were there in Lambeau. It looked pretty nice up in Green Bay, and I was just thinking, you're not going to get a hurricane up there. It would have to be the biggest hurricane in the history of man for it to hit Green Bay, Wisconsin.
You might have the next ice age, but definitely not a hurricane.
Yeah, winter storms, those are the things that happen there. They have the Great Lakes, but you're not going to get that type of weather. So interesting over the weekend there. Make sure you check out thetrumpet.com today, top story at thetrumpet.com. The real Russia scandal. Remember when Russia was in the news? There's still a lot going on there, but of course it's taken a back seat. The real Russia scandal. Is Vladimir Putin trying to strengthen the Trump presidency or weaken it? By Andrew Miller. And then related to that, a booklet offered, Great Again. We are going to talk about that booklet, actually, coming up later in the show. So that's a nice little tie in there. And it's interesting, the Russian thing, I guess, is kind of coming maybe in the news a little bit more again, because Hillary Clinton has this new book out, and she's on her book tour now, so she's talking about some of those events.
Have you seen some of these? Usually it's on Fox, but they'll have a list of all the people that Hillary Clinton has blamed for her election loss, and it's literally like 30 bullet points long. She just blames everyone left, right, and center, and never focuses on the fact that maybe she's the reason that she lost. That is a good question to ask, though. What does Russia really think about the American presidency? Do they actually want Mr. Trump to succeed? It seems like they've always hated America, so why would they want any president of any political party to succeed?
Yeah, they're definitely out for their own interests. They're not out for the interest of America, that's for sure. But I guess sometimes one side's got to find somebody to blame for something, or set up an enemy, which Russia is an enemy of the U.S., but I think a pretty equal enemy for whoever would come into that office.
And it is just quite hypocritical for the left now to be freaking out about Russia when they have been quite close friends of Russia for decades now. To blame Macedonian content farmers, like those people who create fake websites and spread fake news, for her loss is just outrageous and ridiculous. She's blaming plenty of people in her own political party, plenty of people who helped her run her campaign and probably worked 24 hours a day for months trying to serve her and make sure that she became the next leader of the country. There's just no gratitude there, and she's definitely not accepting the election results, which she demanded that Mr. Trump do if he had lost.
So you're not going to read the book?
I actually will probably read the book. I just probably won't think too highly of it.
Well, it is, every time there's an election, there is a winner and a loser, and I don't know, I can't remember too many people that have lost coming out and writing a vengeful book about it. Maybe it's happened and I just don't know about it. Or anything in life. I'm not concerned about who lost the 25 World Series. It's over with, right? We don't need to read about how they were sabotaged. Anybody could do that if they were upset, but it comes across like sour grapes.
True. There is an element to this loss that I'm sure is especially humiliating for her. The fact that she probably spent about 100 times more on her campaign than Mr. Trump did. And Mr. Trump spent just his own money. He didn't even raise money for it, as far as I understand, for the most part, at least. The fact that she was destined to coast to an easy victory by a landslide, and that's what all the polls showed, and then she loses, it probably had a big hit on the ego.
So I don't know. I don't know how has it been selling? Has it been up at the top? Have you seen it?
I don't know. It gets plenty of media coverage, so I would think a lot of people on both sides of the aisle and even in the middle would think it probably at least is a book to check out.
Yeah, well, probably a moneymaker, if nothing else. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show is coming up today with your host, Stephen Fleury. Make sure you listen for that. Talking today about many people being familiar, of course, with the song God Bless America and that sentiment. You hear it, I think, basically every political speech. Even if nothing about God is said, at the very end, they'll typically say God Bless America. The question, though, is would that same God curse America for sin? That's something you don't hear really. Well, you hear a little bit, but not too much in the world today.
The fact that that song is always played at these different events where God is never mentioned otherwise does just show that that phrase is becoming secular. It's just becoming like something that we say out of custom. Like if you see someone in the morning, you ask them how they're doing. Usually when we ask how someone is doing, we do not expect a 5-minute response detailing people's deepest trials.
Right.
But it's just a customary greeting. This is kind of the same thing where people do not really even believe in God in a lot of cases, or they don't believe that he's even involved in the country, and they don't think that he would necessarily bless or curse America, but they say it out of custom. But there's something to that. There is a God who blesses the country and he curses the country. There's different conditions for it. People just don't want to think too much about it, it doesn't seem like.
It's always interesting when there's a political speech and a lot of cases the whole thing is pretty negative and it's really attacking the other side. And at the end they say, well, God bless America. Kind of just tack that on there at the end. But, you know, it is interesting to think about. Just look at this list here of 2017 U.S. natural disasters. And there's more than we'll talk about here. We'll just talk about some of the big ones. This is just 2017. So you have California wildfires. There's quite a few that you could talk about within that. You've got Hurricane Harvey and Irma, which, of course, catastrophic. And I guess there's a few more that could be coming through, too. So that, you know, hold on. That may not be the end. They had Montana wildfires, Oregon wildfires, Washington State wildfires. And those places are usually pretty wet and lush. And so they've had wildfires. Been a big heat wave. And then California's had floods as well. That's just some of the disasters, natural disasters, in 2017.
And some of those are just extreme rarities, like you bring out the fact that places in the Pacific Northwest are having fires when they get rained on constantly. The fact that places in California are being flooded when they're more known for droughts, it just shows you there's something out of the ordinary going on. And also the fact that these disasters are only increasing, we have to question why that is the case now.
Somebody was telling me over the weekend, I was talking to a friend who has somebody they know up in Oregon area, I believe, And I think there's ash on their car, on the vehicle.
Wow.
So from some of these fires. Of course, Harvey is estimated to be the costliest natural disaster in U.S. history. I think it's going to be about $190 billion. I don't know if that number has increased or decreased. And then, they don't have a factor on Irma yet. I don't imagine it would be quite as much, but who knows? I mean, they're still kind of figuring out what happened there. You start to add up all that money and it gets to be a thing where you have to sit back and say, well, are we being blessed? I mean, are those blessings? No one would consider those to be blessings.
And yet we say God bless America, and some of us expect blessings. We don't think that curses are possible. It's like all those people who believe that God exists but Satan doesn't exist. You can't believe in one side of the equation and then just think that the other side of the equation isn't there.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's talked about on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. Is God blessing America? Does he curse? That's a question to look at, and it's talked about there on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and that comes up today here on KPCG. And if you can't catch it live or during a replay, make sure you get the archives at kpcg.fm or at thetrumpet.com. Today is September the 11th, and of course, September the 11th, we all think, I think, of the September 11th, 2001 World Trade Center attacks. Very an interesting time where I think everyone has very specific memories of where they were on that day, if they were alive. If we've moved on, some people weren't alive yet, but where they were, what they were doing. The impact of those attacks definitely rocked the world in many, many ways, and we still feel the reverberations of that attack today.
Yeah, we definitely do. And I think I was only in third grade back at the time, but for some reason, my mother and I got to our class like 30 or 40 minutes early before the school day even started. And so we were there watching the news with the teacher when no one else was even pretty much in the building yet. And I just couldn't believe what was happening. I couldn't comprehend it being that young and thinking that, you know, generally people should try to get along. I didn't understand kind of the nuance and the detail of different nations conflicting like that and having ideologies that could cause them to carry out such hateful acts. But here we are, and it's already been 16 years since that happened. That was really probably the last time that the country ever showed real unity, and it was only about a few weeks that lasted.
Yeah, and yeah, we're more divided now than we've ever been, probably, or at least in modern times. That was very early on. I think that was the first year, actually, of Armstrong College, where mm-hmm. we're broadcasting from now. And I do remember, you know, some of the first students that were there having classes that day. Sort of a surreal day, obviously, yeah. where you're kind of having classes, but you're kind of watching the news, too, because of all these events that were happening. And, yeah, it was a wild time for sure. Some interesting notes here about it. Of course, 19 men hijacked 4 fuel-loaded U.S. commercial airplanes bound for West Coast destinations. A total of 2,977 people were killed. The attack was orchestrated by al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. The victims of that attack ranged in age from 2 to 85 years. Approximately 75 to 80% of the victims were men, which is interesting. I suppose a lot of those are first responders. We're at work that day, I guess. At the Pentagon in Washington, 184 people were killed. And then near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, 40 passengers and crew members aboard United Airlines Flight 93 died when that plane crashed into a field. And I think it was pretty much taken down by the people on the plane because they knew they were being hijacked. So what would that one have done if it had reached its destination?
Yeah, I saw a documentary about that one. That was just flat out heroic to attack the hijackers, because even when you know that other planes have hit these different buildings, there's always a hope, I'm sure, if you're on a plane, that maybe the hijackers will land the plane and then hold you hostage and give you away for ransom instead of killing everybody. But they acknowledge reality and they took action, which is extremely scary, knowing that either way you're going to crash, but if you actually do something about it, fewer lives will be killed.
Yeah, they're very heroic. As of August 2017, 1,641, or 60%, of the 2,753 World Trade Center victims' remains have been positively identified. So there's really quite a few that haven't even been identified yet. But again, considering the way everything happened, in some cases, you just may not find those remains.
Yeah, some people were just completely incinerated and then blown away in the wind. So it's pretty sad to think about that, but clearly there are going to be some people we'll never find again. There are people alive as well who have experienced a lot of health trauma from just being nearby those buildings collapsing. I just think about a building that is hundreds of feet in the air coming down, and then all that debris being in the air for many years after that.
Yeah, and of course, if everyone's seen the footage, obviously, but you know, when you saw the immediate aftermath and the thick cloud of dust and everything, people running from it, trying to hide in buildings and things. And a lot of people that did work in the cleanup have had some problems there too, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of stuff in there that you're breathing in that isn't good. So it's really been a massive situation. And then, of course, the U.S. responded and the world responded, and that shifted the way the Middle East is shaped. You know, you don't have Iraq and Saddam Hussein there in the same way. Now Iran is a bigger player. So much has happened really because of this day there and that attack that happened September 11th, 2001.
Yeah, and it had a huge part in bringing about the King of the South, Iran, into its place, like prophecy dictates, like this church was saying would happen before that attack even took place. And back at the time when Mr. Flurry was saying those things, it didn't seem like Iran would ever be in control of the region because of Saddam Hussein. Sure enough, this one attack led to America taking out Iran's biggest rival, and now Iran is in charge.
Yeah, and if you maybe taking some time today to think about some of that history and remember some of it, it's interesting to go back at thetrumpet.com and just even look at the trumpet covers from around that time period and then afterwards, and you can get a sense of what the issue is about, of course, and there's plenty of one in particular, you know, is Iraq about to fall to Iran, you know, early on, things like that, that now we do see that it has happened in that way. And it's just interesting to go back and look at those and think about what the world was like when those magazines first came out or those articles first came out. And now what we see today, you know, 16 years on from that original attack.
And probably back then, much of the world would have laughed at covers like that, saying that Iran's going to take charge when none of the physical signs point to anything like that taking place at all. So there had to have been God's inspiration there to even for anyone to even know that that was going to happen.
It's really interesting too. YouTube's got a lot of videos up about just the newscast from that day. It is very eerie to watch those, and especially knowing the history now, you know, and watching the reporters kind of scrambling to try to figure out what's happening and how did this happen, or to watch the shows right before it happened. You know, it's just a normal day and they're talking and they're doing the weather report and so forth. And then knowing what's about to occur, it's really, I don't know, it's strangely, I don't know if captivating is the right word, but it is kind of interesting to go back and look at some of that history.
It's also disturbing to see how they reacted to the first plane hitting a tower, because a lot of them were holding out hope that maybe this wasn't intentional. And, you know, that's not too realistic. How often do you ever see a plane crash land into a building in the middle of a gigantic city? But there was maybe some reason to believe that it wasn't on purpose. Then you just see the panic on their faces when they saw the second tower hit. Most of those stations were showing the live footage of the first plane wrecking that tower. And so they had live footage of the second plane hitting it. As it happened, it was live on TV, and then just people panicking when that happened.
Stephen Fleury points out on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today about how they're having, in some places, they really are having a hard time figuring out how to talk about this event in some schools, because inevitably you have to talk about Islam and the fact that the attackers were Islamic, that Islamic ideology. And they were attacking the West. And especially if you're in a multicultural school setting, which a lot of people are, particularly in Britain, how do you bring it up? they're struggling to figure out how to do that.
That's true. It's I guess that's the scourge of political correctness striking again, because why do we put in so much effort to defend our mortal foes? They are all the time acknowledging that they're in a war with us. And we ignore that all the time. We blind ourselves to that. Ann Coulter said pretty soon after it happened that we should invade their countries and convert them all to Christianity, which was a pretty controversial stance to take. And it provoked a lot of outrage. But she said, you know, it doesn't have to be Christianity. It could be the Peace Corps or whatever it is. But anything that turns people away from an ideology like that, why is it so controversial to just say, yeah, we should try to change those minds and get them away from what they believe, because what they believe caused a lot of people to die.
And I think if people remember, if you watch the news coverage that day that it happened, there were plenty of Arabic nations, there Islamic nations that were celebrating in the streets.
Yeah,
and nations that we deal with today, or you know, the Palestinians were happy. I remember them celebrating. You know, not enough. They should show some of that footage again. And they weren't sad when it happened. They were out there celebrating in the streets, but people have forgotten that history, or they don't want to talk about it. So we are handcuffed by political correctness.
Yeah, we really are. No one is saying that every single Arab or every single Muslim is a terrorist, but there has to be an acknowledgement of reality, especially when you're teaching history. You have to be accurate with that. It's about reporting the facts, not pushing your agenda that's driven by political correctness. You have to say why those guys blew up those buildings.
Well, it's interesting because we've talked before about how there is such a heavy influence from communism in the educational system. And I was reading a book about this fellow that grew up in Germany in the World War II time period. He was a Jewish fellow. He escaped, thankfully. Years later, he went back to West Germany. Actually, no, sorry, it was East Germany because it was under the communist rule. And he was able to go there to the town he grew up in. And he went and he talked to a group of school kids, high school kids, and he asked them some, you know, things about history. They didn't know anything about it. The communists didn't teach them anything about the war. They didn't know anything about it.
That's exactly what happens, and that's what the communist goal is, to eliminate history. As long as people are ignorant of history, they will choose communism every time because it sounds so idealistic, it sounds utopian, it sounds hopeful, and yet it's not grounded in reality at all. History would show that. History would prove that communism is actually the most destructive force in the entire world in terms of human governments.
It's an interesting day when you have to, if you were a history teacher, I guess. Here's some numbers just that you might find interesting. $500,000, that's the estimated amount of money it costs to plan and execute the 9/11 attacks. So pretty amazing that they could pull that off. $123 billion, that's the estimated economic loss during the first 2 to 4 weeks after the World Trade Center towers collapsed. $123 billion, that's an amazing amount of money.
Yeah, and consider the name, it's the World Trade Center. So yep. It's definitely dealing with a lot of business. And so, of course, that target, it's particularly devastating when something like that is hit.
$60 billion, that was the estimated cost of the World Trade Center site damage, including damage to surrounding buildings, infrastructure, and subway facilities. It was quite, we really were spared greater damage because they collapsed straight down, which they were designed to do.
Yeah, actually, that's one way of looking at it because that attack did show how well constructed those buildings were. I believe it took like an hour and a half for the buildings to actually fall down after they were struck. So there was a lot of time for at least people below the plane in the building to try to get down the stairs and escape. And even when the building collapsed, it went straight down. And so people were able to, if they got far enough away, they didn't have to worry about a gigantic building falling sideways on top of them.
Yeah, it would have caused, obviously, more damage. $40 billion, that's the value of the emergency anti-terrorism package that was approved by the Congress on September 14th, 2001. $15 billion aid package passed by Congress to bail out the airlines. $9.3 billion insurance claims arising from the 9/11 attacks. It took 3.1 million hours of labor to clean up 1.8 million tons of debris. The total cost of the cleanup was $750 million. And, of course, some of those people are having health problems today because of working there.
Right. That's really some of the saddest history of this, and because it's still ongoing. It's not 16 years ago. People are living with this every day. Some of them still can't work because of diseases they've gotten or disabilities that they have received from this attack. People are living in misery every single day, not just from losing loved ones, but just because of their own ailments now, too.
Quite an expensive attack in many ways. And, of course, if you wanted to figure in, say, the military spending on going to Iraq, loss of life there in Afghanistan, I mean, you know, it would start to get huge. It just shows what can happen. And it's amazing, too, with, I don't know, the documentaries I've seen anyway, and I think they're pretty accurate, when they follow those terrorists. You know, they were on the radar of the U.S. for a long time. They knew what they were doing. They knew where they were. They knew they were taking flight lessons. And they got lost for just a few days as they traveled and then made their fatal attack. So it's interesting history. I believe they even got pulled over here in Oklahoma because they were driving and they got pulled over for, I don't know if it was speeding or some violation. But, of course, you know, they didn't know what they were up to. And so they did whatever they needed to do and went on their way. But it is interesting how at any point something could have happened to stop them, but yet nothing did.
Right. They had a lot of opportunities to be caught, and sometimes smaller violations of the law can stop much larger crimes from taking place, because imagine how nervous those guys must have been before carrying out those attacks. They wanted to be successful, and they didn't want to get caught before it happened, and so probably they would be more prone to speeding and breaking other smaller laws, and if they were caught and totally exposed for what they were doing, the whole thing could have been stopped. So that sometimes shows you why diligence in policing is a really good thing. Even if it involves profiling or whatever else, it can save a lot of lives too.
Yeah, so that really interesting history today. And of course, a lot of the news is on the hurricanes and things. So I've seen a few little blurbs about the history of 9/11, but not like what it used to be. You remember, you know, in the year or two afterwards, of course, things really stopped for a while. And people really paid attention to it. But now, you know, you have football games yesterday where you had people protesting the U.S. And what about tonight? I mean, it's Monday Night Football, two games. People are going to protest on September 11th. Does anybody remember that?
Right. I did hear of one guy who has done those protests before and refrained only during a September 11th game in the past.
Okay.
But the thing is, why would you only not do it during September 11th? If it shows disrespect on any day, you're showing disrespect on all the days. It's not just September 11th that you are committing an abominable act by kneeling for the anthem. You're doing it every single day that you play a game. It's not just September 11th that is offensive. It's all those different days when you're making that protest.
And people don't like it. The ratings have shown that people aren't fond of those things. And, of course, they have to show. They always want to show it on TV, you know. Even if people are doing it, they just ignore it. They can do whatever they want, but why do you have to focus on them? Half the time you wouldn't even notice unless they really put the camera on them, you know. So
it doesn't even make sense. Like, it doesn't even fit into the flow of the broadcast. At the start of the 49ers game yesterday, they were a few minutes in, and then they said, and this is what happened a few minutes ago. Then they show a clip of the sideline, a guy kneeling and a few guys with their hands on that guy's shoulder.
Yep.
It's like that had nothing to do at all with what you were talking about. You just randomly interject it. I don't understand why they're doing that. Does that give them, do they think that gives them more ratings or at least creates more controversy for their TV broadcasts?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It does seem like they're trying to keep it going, like keep the fires lit there. So
yeah.
It's interesting, and that ties in a little bit to what we want to talk about here, this really tremendous book at thetrumpet.com, Great Again, I believe. But one of the more popular ones that people have gotten, and just some great information in there. We're going to be taking a look at some of the info today. It's a free book, and you can get it at thetrumpet.com. And it starts out with the question, make America great again. And, of course, President Trump ran on that slogan, great again. The writer of the book, Mr. Gerald Fleury, writes this, do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? You know, not too long ago, everybody in the U.S. would say yes. But today, depends on who you ask.
Just shows you the subversive goal of communism to re-educate people about history and to only focus on, I guess, what you could call the negative aspects. You know, different Indian tribes being relocated. They'll focus on that, or they'll focus on the fact that we once had slavery. They don't really talk about how to this day those groups are doing very well within the country because of sacrifices that were made by American heroes.
The book goes on to say, do you have a favorable view of the Founding Fathers, the Constitution, separation of powers, rule of law, manifest destiny, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, free market economy, and America's role in World Wars I and II? Again, depends on who you ask. And then it says, if you do, then surely you are deeply alarmed by the state of America today. All of these pillars of American history and identity are being vilified and destroyed. America's educators are teaching oncoming generations to be embarrassed by them. And that sentiment is very strong in a lot of places. There's a write-up related to this from the ABA Journal. And the title is, from a few years ago, Flunking Civics, Why America's Kids Know So Little. And, of course, it gets back to what they're being taught, or in this case, not taught in school. It says, parents traditionally worry about what their children are learning in school, but it's what those students are not learning that's even more unsettling. Only one state deserved a rating of A when it came to teaching its students American history, according to a recent study. Most states fall in the category of mediocre to awful.
Oh.
So they're just not, either they're not learning it, and then of course today in some cases they are learning a negative view of it.
Right. That's also, I mean, it's just amazing how all these things get back to a communist plot. We're not we're not putting on the tinfoil hat. This is real. This is well documented if people want to look into it. Part of the communist plot in education is to get rid of civics discussion, talking about people's duties as American citizens. They replace that education with learning how to protest, how to agitate, how to sort of create unrest to cause social change. Those are the types of classes that are replacing civics classes now. The history has been flipped on its head, and it's now completely distorted and perverted. That's a communist plot, because if you take away people's foundational pride in being Americans, you can totally overthrow the country.
Yeah, that's ignorance is really growing. This report continues and says, as a result of not being taught about civics, many young Americans are not prepared to participate fully in our democracy now and when they become adults. Or I would say they are participating, but they're also easily duped, because these young people, and again, now this report's from a few years ago, so a lot of these kids would be college students today or the young adults. And so with no foundational education about even what the government is, really the history of the U.S. in any way, they're easily pulled to one side or the other, and in most cases they're being pulled to the radical left. They're easily duped because they don't know anything. So they're told, you're not getting a fair bargain here, and they believe it because they don't know any better.
Right. That's truly a sad aspect of education today. The fact that it is so full of lies and dishonesty, with professors knowing that they are lying to their students, but they do it anyway. Back to the communism thing, it's like almost 4,000 people at one time were employed by the Kremlin to teach in America as professors within American universities. It just shows you those people know that they're trying to undermine the country. They don't honestly even believe the communist ideals. They just know that it will overthrow the country.
They're having a lot of success with it. It says the problem, notice this here from this report, the problem is exacerbated by evidence of what researchers describe as growing civic achievement gap. So we have two groups that are forming here. The gap is between what they call the white, wealthy, native-born youths who demonstrate consistently higher levels of civic and political knowledge, skills, and attitudes, and participation, and poor, non-white, and immigrant youths who are thus at a disadvantage politically. Well, I don't know that they're at a disadvantage politically. Maybe they are, but they're easily being formed into groups. And so you have these groups that are fighting against the government and protesting. And when I say the government, I mean the historical government of the United States. You know, the Constitution, so forth. They're fighting against it, and they're mad, and they're not going to take it anymore, but they don't even know what they're fighting against in most cases, because as this report shows, they were never taught even what the government of the United States is.
Yeah, those minority groups are being targeted and exploited and plundered by the radical left. They're just political fodder right now, and it's just it's frustrating to watch that happen. A lot of them are just being duped into believing that some sort of grave injustice has been forced upon them. Being in the greatest country in history, somehow that's a horrible thing. Having an opportunity to climb the ladder and become an amazing success. There are people of all races, all backgrounds, who are at the very top of this society, and yet educators will not have them understand that and believe that they can achieve the same thing.
Yeah, there's a quote from Roger Ailes, who was the one of the main founders there of Fox News with Rupert Murdoch, and he said the only entitlement you need is to be in America.
Yeah.
Because you have lots of opportunities and lots of chances if you'll take them and if you'll work hard. But so you can see that there are these groups that are breaking apart, and a lot of it is, of course, over sort of a racial line, because you just have different ideologies that are being pushed there. And tying into that, of course, as we mentioned earlier, you know, the NFL opening weekend, they had the more of the protests that were going on. And there was also a protest that went on there in Portland. Antifa, this is from Fox News, Antifa throws smoke and projectiles at police at Portland rallies, 7 arrested. So these agitators are out there. And they were protesting, I guess, white supremacy. So I don't know if they know what they're protesting. They have a lot of phrases you could call it like a buzz phrase, but as this earlier report shows, most people that are out there doing those things and in that generation haven't even learned about the foundation of the U.S., the government system, or any of it, but they're sure going to fight against it.
Well, Barack Obama's mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, wrote about the Red Army and how fond he was of the Soviets. He wrote poetry about it, and he talked about how the communists are no threat, but American imperialism is a threat because it pushes white supremacy. So they always talk about white supremacy as being this the chief enemy of all people. And here we have these protesters now quoting Frank Marshall Davis, basically, who was a card-carrying communist member who influenced America's last president. It really does get back to this idea of this entire government is corrupt and evil. The way that America was founded on biblical principles is totally wrong, and you have to infiltrate that, wear it down, and eventually overthrow it. Those people who are protesting might not understand the whole depth of it, but they're unwittingly, at least, contributing to overthrowing the country.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the concerns of some of those reports about the lack of education is that people won't participate in politics. Well, they're participating all right, but they're participating without knowledge, which means they're very susceptible to racial politics, gender politics, whatever it might be, economic politics, in the sense of dividing people by all sorts of lines. You know, they're not there isn't this this great ideal that all people are working towards or fighting for as a group, you know, the freedoms in our country or what our country was founded on, which would go back to biblical principles. So when those things get pushed aside, then it's much easier to start to divide people, which we see happening just constantly. This book, Great Again, points out another issue besides just the internal division. It's the foreign policy of the United States. It says the nation's foreign policy is utterly transformed. We have seen apologies, concessions, and surrenders made to dictators and despots, while longtime alliances like those with the United Kingdom and the Jewish State of Israel have been cast aside. Nations that have relied on America for leadership, strength, security, protection, face a new reality and are having to forge alternate relationships even if they undermine America. How true that's been. The big one, I think, that we could all think of right away would be Iran. And our deal with them, I guess, if you want to call it that.
And there had been a clear emphasis on lowering America's status in the world under the last administration and causing our greatest enemies to be elevated pretty much up to our level if possible, if we could allow them to do that. The thing is, if any nation in the entire world is being honest, who would they really want to be their greatest friend? Would they want it to be America, or would they prefer Germany or China or Iran or Russia? If they were being honest, they would all pick America because they wouldn't have to tremble in fear of America looming over them like they do these other Gentile powers that clearly are only looking out for their own interests, and they will abuse other nations to get those interests.
There is, of course, the Iran situation where the last administration made this deal with them was a big deal, and then it's kind of fallen off the headlines a little bit because North Korea has come into the headlines. But notice this headline here for today from The Telegraph. Exclusive: North Korea's secretly helped by Iran to gain nuclear weapons, British officials fear. North Korea's sudden advancement in developing nuclear weapons may be due, they say, to secret support from Iran. British officials fear. The Foreign Office is investigating whether current and former nuclear states helped Kim Jong-un in his drive to mount nuclear warheads on missiles. You know, you may have noticed they've been very active lately. Senior Whitehall sources told the Sunday Telegraph, it is not credible that North Korean scientists alone brought about the technological advances. Iran is top of the list of countries suspected of giving some form of assistance, while Russia is also in the spotlight. And, of course, that little triangle there would go every which direction. You know, they could all help each other. Russia being the one with the most knowledge. And so we're worrying about North Korea today. Boy, we're going to be worrying about Iran pretty soon.
North Korea really is just a distraction, and yet even that distraction points back to the real threats, because Iran's helping North Korea. Iran is the king of the South. They're one of those extremely prophetically significant powers. Russia and China are very supportive of North Korea, even if they don't always say it. By their actions, you can tell, and even by their inactions, you can tell that they're supportive of North Korea. Those are the kings of the East, which is another prophetically significant block. North Korea is belligerent, and they very well could set off some dangerous missiles that could hurt some people, but they're not going to trigger World War III, which is what people think. They're just distracting from the bigger powers that are behind it all.
So, history is an interesting thing. It takes time to see where a decision ends up. And this deal that the Obama administration made with Iran, you know, we haven't seen the end of it yet. We see some things happening, but we haven't seen where it settles yet. And even related to that, Angela Merkel, who's very I don't know what her popularity is in Germany. It's not as much as it used to be. She came out recently, and she's a big courser. I think she was a big supporter of President Obama. At least they kind of saw eye to eye on some things. And she came out just the last day or two and said, "Look, you know, in dealing with North Korea, we need to have talks with them like we did with Iran, right? Like, well, first of all, that's already been tried. The Clinton administration did that, and it didn't work." And you going to talk to North Korea? Can you imagine those meetings? I can't even imagine what would happen there. But you know, is that our best hope for foreign policy? Germany is not going to think that way for too long. They're going to take a more aggressive stance very very shortly. But for now, that's her idea anyway.
They're going to take a very common sense stance, a stance that's actually rooted in reality. Pretty soon, Angela Merkel has fled reality recently, and I just feel like. That kind of a meeting with North Korea, it would be like, well, first of all, that guy thinks he's a god. So to get any sort of concession from him, you'd have to bow to the ground. You'd have to acknowledge his deity status. It'd just be a total farce of a meeting in every way. And that's even assuming that he makes any concessions at all, which why would he?
They're a third-rate power, to say the least, even though they're dangerous now. But you wouldn't even, you know... It used to be that an American president wouldn't even dignify something like that. Like, right. He wouldn't even acknowledge them. So that's going on. The foreign policy of the U.S. has really changed and is shifting, of course, foreign policy around the world for many nations. Also from this booklet, Great Again, which is just a tremendous book that we're highlighting today. Mr. Fleury says, there is a spiritual dimension to America's decline that most people do not see. The crisis facing this nation is not because of a bad president. The cause is far deeper, but most people are unwilling to face it. Many Americans realize that the nation is off track and suffering. You hear a lot of people speaking about what ails America and how to fix it. Yes, you do. That's why the cable news companies are doing so well. This is from Variety. Cable news ratings, MSNBC, CNN, Fox News post double-digit growth in quarter two. People are feeding every night on what's coming out of those cable news networks.
There is a lot to, I guess there's a lot of intrigue to pointing out problems, but a lot of those news networks are not giving any solutions. They don't have solutions. They're just adamantly yelling about the different problems that are on the scene today. Everyone can see what the problems are. There are just different ways that people have of solving them. There's conservative ideas. There's liberal ideas. None of those ideas involve God at all. They just are totally reliant on human reasoning. That's where it's going to fall short.
Yeah, you know, it would be stunning to hear something about the Bible on one of those shows, unless they were making fun of it, I guess. This write-up from Variety says, driven by surges for the Rachel Maddow show. You heard that right. And last word with Lawrence O'Donnell, MSNBC is up a whopping 86% in total viewers in primetime compared to second quarter 2016. 86%. It is high living right now at MSNBC. That stuns me. I'm amazed by that.
That's the home of the haters now. That's why they're so popular. They can't stand President Trump, so they go to MSNBC for some cathartic coverage.
Apparently. That's an I like cathartic coverage.
Alliteration there.
Yeah. CNN saw a 39% leap which is amazing too. In adults, 25 to 54 in the total day. Fox News is Tucker Carlson tonight, and MSNBC's Rachel Maddow split the crown for most watched cable news programs in primetime, with Carlson winning the total viewers and Maddow taking the demographic of, I guess, that 25 to 54. So those people are a little more in line with some of the thinking there that would be coming from MSNBC. Overall, the older folks, I think, are a little more get a little more of their information and value the information coming from Fox. So it's an age breakdown there.
Right. You were telling me the other day that Roger Ailes once advised Rachel Maddow to kind of change her approach a little bit, right? That mm-hmm. And maybe it would appeal to a lot more people if she were just a little bit less dogmatic in her beliefs.
Yeah, he told her that he thought she had talent, but if she just understood that not everyone in the world thought the way she did, that maybe she'd have more viewers.
That's the hard part of trying to watch some of those networks, is that they force their ideas on you. That's why it's just hard to listen to it for more than a few minutes at a time. If they at least just laid out a clear, maybe like three-reason plan or idea for why their ideas work, people would actually say, hey, well, at least I'm understanding where your logic is coming from. Too often, all you hear on those shows is just a bunch of invective, tons of fruitless insults, a lot of divisive commentary. Why not just explain your ideas and have a little bit of humility about it?
That would be an interesting thing to see. I don't know. I wonder how it would do if people would, you know, respond to it or not. I think in most cases that they don't have a lot of great ideas, obviously. And some of the problems that are happening in the U.S., you know, no matter what side of the political spectrum a person's on, good luck trying to solve it, because, you know, some of these problems are beyond the solutions that man can come up with.
Could you imagine one of those shows just being like, well, higher taxes, we're going to definitely try to raise everyone's taxes about 20%. Here's why that's a good idea for you. They'd have a hard time convincing a lot of people that that is what is necessary. So maybe that's why they avoid even bringing up those types of topics. It's too difficult to substantiate why they believe something like that. So they just have to bring on some people they disagree with and have a fight, or bring on people they agree with and sort of commiserate together, cry about the president together.
Yeah, it is a lot easier, I think, to try to just tear something down than to build something up. Because that would require you having some ideas to actually build the thing up, as opposed to just taking shots and waiting to see what's done and then say, well, I don't like that. that's a lot easier to do. And of course, I think people are attracted to the drama of it and the emotion of it. And so maybe that's why they're doing better. I don't know. I mean, I'm not surprised that the cable news is growing, but just some of those numbers are amazing. 86% in total viewers for MSNBC. I mean, the Trump presidency is the best thing that ever happened to them.
That's true. And it's not a gradual growth. It's clear that the Trump presidency is the reason why so many people are now tuning into MSNBC. It's not like their programming has been steadily improving in their quality. It's just that they spew hatred, and now a lot of people agree with that hatred, and they're tuning in.
So interesting to look at that there, but it does highlight, as is pointed out here in this booklet at thetrumpet.com, great again, that people, that's what they're talking about. People are very much talking about the problems and the divisions in the country, and they're listening to those conversations as well. Just a few other quotes here from this booklet. He brings out how, of course, there's two different sides. Some people think that the problems in America are historical, like bad foundation, and then a lot of others think it's more recent, bad administrations. So you've got these two sides, and of course they're having these battles. But as Mr. Fleury writes here in this beginning of Great Again, it says, the Bible has a lot to say about the state of America today. It explains the inspiring reason why this nation was so great in the first place and why it has been so richly blessed. The Bible also prophesies that these blessings would be removed in our day. America's problems are spiritual, and solving them requires spiritual solutions. That's why with all the banter on cable news, you don't come to any solutions. And then it says this, could Mr. Trump's presidency be prophesied in your Bible? What you read in this booklet can be proved every chapter If you keep an open mind, it could galvanize your life as nothing ever has before. If you have living faith in this message, it will give you the most majestic reward offered in the Bible. So a lot of problems are pointed out, but there's a lot of positive there as well. And you finally, if you look at this book right again, you do get to the real cause and solution for the problems we see here in the U.S. today.
There certainly is a future that is far greater than anything we see in the country now. The country actually had just about the greatest start that any nation could ever envision, with the nation being founded on a document in the Constitution that is all about religion and morality, those two crucial pillars upon which the entire rest of the nation is built. Mr. George Washington actually said that what you do in the privacy of your own home does matter. And now we're hearing so many leaders today saying, well, it doesn't matter what you do in the privacy of your own home. We're totally okay with any type of behavior. Just come join our political party, vote for us, and it's fine. Well, private morality does matter. Following laws in the Bible does matter. And that's something that we have to get back to and then even magnify 100-fold in the future.
Yeah, check out this book. It's free. It's at thetrumpet.com. Great again. And it's really, really eye-opening, and there's never been a more important time to take a look at that and get the insight that's in there. There's a lot. We just touched a few highlights today. Great, great book, and we're going to talk about it more as we go through this week as well. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us here on this Monday. Getting back to work. We have to do it. Let's do it together. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, thanks for being with us today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.